Competition number 11440, Reel 6.
Mr. Walter Hare, Reel 6, you were telling me about how you took Colonel Croydon up to the line, to the front company, C Company,
yes.
At Vimy.
Yes, so I got him down. I said, you have to crawl a lot of the way, so, because there's snipers on here and it's a bit difficult. Oh, yes, and I made him crawl in places where he needn't have done. I crawled as well, you see. And then there was one place where there was a light railway across for bringing the rations up, that kind of thing, and it was still there. We hadn't got that moved. So I said to her, it's going to be awkward for you, yes, to get in underneath here, because it was fairly low down as well. He said, well, how do you get that? And I said, well, I can get underneath, he said, but I think you'll have to somersault over the top. And I said, you'll have to be fairly quick, sir, because there was a sniper on here. Oh? I said, yes, they usually fire. He says, well, you better just show me how you do. Get over the top. So I somersaulted over, and immediately there was a crack of a rifle fire like that, you see. So I hadn't been kidding him about this sniper. Well, he hesitated a bit, and then he came over, and I did enjoy seeing that big, hefty fella come down into the trench again. And we called, you know, I kidded him a bit to make it more awkward than I need to have done. We got to the front line and he saw the colonel and he said, now then, how do we get back? I said, well, the same way, sir. I called him a bit of trouble getting back. And when he got back into, as he was going down into his, he had the dugout, he was in a cellar underneath what had been a house in the village, you see. And as he was going down into the cellar, I said, oh, sir, is it necessary for us to wear full uniform when we're going on our errands? He said, you can wear what the hell you like. So I said to the corporal, right, we're back to bandolier and rifle. I ought to have had a VC for that, because they all said I'd done very well to get the colonel to squash this out, you see. So after that, we were all right.
What happened? What was the colonel's headquarters like?
It was just a dugout.
How big?
Well, a cellar of a house it was.
Actually in Vimy, was it?
It was in Gavrel.
In Gavrel. So, yes.
Yes, in Gavrel. When we were in the line. When we were in support, it was in Vimy village itself.
And What made up the headquarters? There was the colonel, and what else was there?
Oh, there was the adjutant, and that would be about all.
The signalers, they
would have a separate cellar somewhere. They did. I remember I saw the first wireless set I'd ever seen there at Gavrel. I was on a message and I called in to the signals. I said, are you signal, you're out of order again? He said, yes, they've been dropped from shells. And he said, we're going to the front line, in front of the village. He said, yes, it's out of order. I said, what's that contraption you've got? He said, it's a new thing, is this? We can send a message without wires. He said, I can get in touch with brigade headquarters. So he said, going to make it easier for you. He says, what they call a wireless set. So we don't have wires, you see. And he said, we'd have an aerial and an earth wire. Stuck a bit, that had a bayonet stuck out for his earth. And then he said, the trouble is, the Germans can hear it as well, so we have to be very careful what message we send, you see. Because everybody can, they can find it out, hear it as well. So he said, we're no better off, really. And they had a big accumulator thing, you see, and it was a very big contraption, you know. It wasn't very, well, it's improved a lot since then, hasn't it? I remember after the war I made my first cat's whisker set.
Now, where were the rest of the headquarters personnel? I'm thinking of the Regimental, Sergeant Major, Regimental Quartermaster.
Oh, they were all pretty well about the same place, all in the support line trench. Yes.
And they'd all have different.
Yes, they would have So someone would have cellars. We didn't. We were just in the trenches.
And where was brigade headquarters? What was that like?
They had a good big, deep... It had been a German dugout, a big dugout on the top of Vimy Ridge. They were sort of comfortably placed.
Now, another duty of the runner sounds if it was leading units in and out of the line.
Yes.
Was that part of your duty?
That was part of your job. Yes, you had to, an incoming party, sometimes you had to meet them and show them, to bring them into the trenches they were taking over from you, you see. And then...
So a new unit, the next battalion...
The next battalion was coming and taking from you.
You'd have to...
We usually met them at the top called Pont de Jour, the top of the ridge, and brought them down. Because, you see, the road was a bit difficult. They shelled it quite a lot, so you had to find a way down. There was lots of rubbish on the ridge, old German guns and a lot of shell holes and barbed wire and all kinds of things, you see. And it was difficult finding getting a way through. But I usually managed all right. And then when you were going out on rest, very often your job was to guide your company or it was out to the new billet.
Now, when you took a new unit in, who was in charge of handing over trench doors, warning them of dangerous bits, you know, where the sniper had to be, that sort of information? You know,
well,
would it be you or would it be the officer?
Well, you did. You told them what you could, but I think it was the officer that told them.
So what sort of thing would you tell them?
Say, you want to be careful if you go up the community and down the side of the village, that there's a few snipers on there, and don't attempt to go through the village at all because they shell it fairly regularly. One or two things like that, you see.
And who would you tell? Their runner or...?
Yes, well, an officer that was with the party, very likely.
One thing about a runner is that if you're given a message to give, if it was shelling in between where you were and where the message had to go, were you allowed to wait for the shelling to die down?
No, you had to get there. You want to get, if it was a message you wanted, because sometimes you used to say, well, it'll only be to see how many sandbags they have or something like that. We thought it was a waste of time, because we didn't know it wasn't a message, you see. But,
So was it for all messages? Whatever happened, you had to just go on?
You had to go, yes.
Would they not tell you, don't worry too much about this one or...
No. I once took a message, so our company was in front of the village. And when I got to there, it took a bit of getting to this place because they were doing a bit of shelling. And when I got there, the officer looked at me and he says, where's your gas mask? I said, well, it's here. So he said, why haven't you got it on? I said, well, I didn't know. And he said, the gas in the place, they're sending gas shells over. This is the message to tell him that there was a gas alert on. They were sending gas on. And that's when I got gassed. Taking the message, I need to be in. I walked through all that lot without my gas mask on, and I had it with me. And if I'd have been told what that message was before I went, I would have been prepared, you see.
How did the gas affect you?
Well, it made me breathe.
Which gas was it?
It wasn't mustard. I wouldn't have been here if it had been mustard. It was chlorine or whatever it was, you see. And... I wasn't too bad. I never went sick with it. I didn't want to leave the battalion because...
How did you feel? What symptoms did you have that day?
Bad breathing, that was all. But I was not a smoker, you see, so it didn't affect me as it would have affected some of the lads. It was never too bad.
How long did it last for? The trouble with your breathing?
A day or two. And then it eased up.
Do you think that had anything to do with you getting emphysema in later life? Because you've got it now, haven't you?
Well, that's what they told me. That's what the specialist said. He said to me, have you ever worked in a factory where there's a lot of powder? I said, no. Have you ever worked down a pit? I said, no. Well, he said, it's funny. He said, you've got a miner's lungs and you've got a smoker's cough. And you don't do either. And he says, oh, how old are you? I told him, oh, you were in the First World War. I said, yes, were you ever in any gas? I said, yes. He says, we needn't look any further. That's been the trouble. I said, but I haven't affected it. It hasn't hurt me up to now. He said, no, because you were younger. It didn't bother you so much. He said, it's been there all the time, but it didn't affect you so much because you were able to cope with it, you see. But now you're getting older, it's taking an effect on you. Now, so I have those inhalers, you see, now.
Looking at you, the gas, was there much gas around
Not a lot, just occasionally, but they were using gas shells, and they were usually they put heavy shells across or shrapnel or something, and they intermix them with these gas shells, so you couldn't tell. They just went plop soft, you didn't hear them, you see.
Was there any warnings they had?
Yes, we had a shell case, and we used to bang it when there was a gas alert on, you see, so that everybody could get the gas masks on.
And which gas mask did you have at that time? Was it the box?
With the box respirators and the pH helmet as well. With two, yes.
What was the difference between the two as far as you were concerned?
Well, one, it was a bag, the pH helmet, you just pulled it over your head, you see, and the other was...
What was that like to wear?
Pretty awful.
What?
It smelled, it was impregnated with something, you see, and it was difficult breathing when you had that over your head. But the other thing was just a mouthpiece you put in with your box respirator, and it was better. But that came later on.
The box respirator?
Yes, yes.
Which did you have when you were gassed, if you see what I mean?
I just had my pH helmet with me, just my band thing, yes.
So they hadn't, when you were at Gavrel, they hadn't issued the box respirator?
No, we hadn't, no.
Later on, you had both for a while?
With both, yes.
Which one would you, why both? I mean, surely you can only wear one at once.
I don't know.
It wasn't about which gas it was then?
No, I don't think, it may have been that the pH helmet was no use for mustard gas. And they were starting to use mustard gas. In fact, we had some chaps there. They did put gas over, mustard gas over, at one time. And some of our chaps were in a terrible state with it.
At that stage, blinding. Did you come into contact with mustard gas?
Yes. Yes, but I always had my helmet on. I was all right. I knew about
it. Did
that.
It affect you anywhere else other than breathing? Because
no. No. Mustard gas could. But it didn't bother me. But I never was in a lot of it, you know.
Was there anything else happened to you at Gavrel that you remember?
Yes, we found that we had to make a further attack. Now, we were never told what our objective was, just that we were to make an attack. I found out later that it was Oppy Wood who was our objective, but we didn't know at the time. The officers would know, but then we didn't know. Yes.
How did you find out later? Sorry, but...
Oh, I don't know, sometime out of the line somebody must have been talking about it. Perhaps one of the officers, I don't know. But however, we were told what time we were moving forward to get us, occupy as much of the German trenches as we possibly could. That was about the only objective we had.
Do you remember the date of this attack?
No, I don't.
No matter.
No, in July maybe. I don't. I just can't remember. But I was to move forward in the centre of the attack and had to move through the village itself. And I dodged about from house to house, and they were shelling it pretty badly at the time. I remember I got down the cellar one time, and they were shelling it so heavy, and I thought, I'll stay. Then I thought, no, I wasn't. I'm in the attack. I must get forward.
So... Were you aware of the term shell hole droppers at the time? I mean, had that sort of idea come out? People who dropped out of an attack by dropping into a shell hole?
Oh, yes, you could do that. But I went forward. It was my job to go forward.
And what was your job as a runner during this attack?
Well, I didn't have a particular job then. I was just one of the attackers.
You weren't attached to an officer then?
No, we would have an officer. I think it was Green would be called the officer. In charge of us. But we went forward. You soon lost your officers, you know, and you were left on your own. I got as far as the German front line, And then I got into a communication trench, the German communication trench, and I was working along here, and I had a sergeant with me, a sergeant called Manley. I think they called him Manley. And there was a corporal that I knew, and there were just the three of us working our way down this German communication trench, starting to get to the rear trench. And as we were going round a corner, the sergeant got a bullet straight in his head, and he just dropped down dead. And the corporal got a bullet wound through his arm. And he says, "Oh, look, Walter, I've got a blighty. Back to York." He said, "You get back yonder. You can't go down here on your own. They were protecting the communications, and you see." So he said, I said, "Well, we're supposed to..." He said, you can't do anything anymore. He said, you must get back to these chaps behind you." So I did, I went back. And eventually we all had to come back. They launched a counter-attack and we got back in the trenches we'd left.
Did you see the Germans counter-attacking? What happened then?
They just came forward with a mass of them, you see, with guns and machine guns. And
did you open fire on them?
We did open fire on them, yes. And we had to man these trenches. And they made counter... We were manning our trenches for a couple of days. They nearly captured them back. They tried to surround us and get the village back again. And we finished up with a lot of casualties. We finished up where we'd started up again.
When the Germans attacked, how did you pick your target? Were you under control of an officer?
No, no, you're fired. You were a one-man effort. You did as you felt you could do.
Was the priority to fire as fast as possible or to fire aim shots as fast as possible?
Well, you tried to aim to the crowd who were advancing. Whether you did any good or not, I don't know. You hadn't time to take aim. You just had to fire.
So you sort of aimed at the crowd? Rather.
You aimed at the crowd, yes. And they made a lot of attacks with quite a few... In fact, later on, when I had my business, a traveller called on me. He'd been a prisoner of war, he said, and he'd been with our battalion. He'd been captured in this guerrilla attack. He'd got forward to the German line and surrounded them.
And how would the German attacks break down? I mean, would they break down before?
Under heavy fire, and eventually we got our artillery onto them as well. Somebody did. I don't know the officer.
So what would happen to them? They just
disintegrated and went back to their own line. They tried several times to.
When they stopped coming towards you, would you stop firing, or would you fire at them as they retreated?
I don't think we fired when they were retreating. No. I think we just, when they were attacking us, I think we fired. But I remember after that performance, I think we'd had maybe 9 or 10 days. It had been pretty rough. We did a lot of casualties. And then we were relieved by the naval division again. And weren't we glad to see them? We were relieved at night relieved, they couldn't go in daylight, it all had to be under darkness, I think. And we were told to get to St. Catherine's camp near Arras as best we could under our own steam. I'd been a runner, I knew me pretty way about, because I usually, if I when we got to a new area, I sort of examined it and I looked around to see where we were and get me bearings. So I got out on this road. I knew it was a bit dangerous, but I went down this road and I walked. And I got eventually to St. Catherine's camp near Arras. And it was fairly daylight when I got there. And it was a bivouac camp, just bivouacs. And there was a sergeant and he said, "Throw your stuff into this bivouac. Your equipment and your rifle, and then there's the field kitchen up the top of the camp. Go and get some breakfast." That's right, Sergeant. He's one of the, we always left so many out, just so many out of details, and he'd been one of the been left, hadn't been in the attack.
The rest of the troops were behind. They'd come with you, had they?
They were stragglers, yes. Straggling. We each went under our own steam, get out the best we could. We didn't. It was no control at all. It was just every man for himself.
Anyway, what was a bivouac camp? Sorry, was that tents or...?
Just, you know, tents like that. Just bivouac camps. It was just a sort of a triangular thing like that. And you didn't have a... You had a blanket, I think, and you drew a blanket, and you had a blanket on the floor, and you slept on the floor.
So what happened? Sorry.
I went up to the cook house, and the cook said, "Now then, how much bacon would you like?" I said, "I beg your pardon." They said, "How much bacon would you like and how much bread?" I said, "But you don't ask us how much we'd like. You give us what we're entitled to." He said, "But you can have what you like this morning." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Well, we've drawn a foot rations for the whole battalion." He said, "There's so few of you, come back so you can have what you like." I said, "No, thank you." So I don't know what I had, but I remember there was a parcel waiting for me from my girlfriend, and there was a letter as well from home. I took this, I got my breakfast, and I went back to my little bivouac, and I sat down, I opened my parcel and read my letter, and then I got down to it, about 8 o'clock at morning. And I woke up about a bit after four that afternoon, and the sergeant was knocking about. He came to me, he said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Yes, I'm champion." I said, "I feel a lot better. I've been asleep since about 8 o'clock this morning." He said, "I've been asleep since 8 o'clock yesterday morning." I said, "I am." He said, "Yes." I said, "I kept coming to have a look at you, see if you were all right. But I saw you were breathing all right." He says, "You've been asleep all the time." He says, "You must have." I said, "We have lost a lot of sleep. It had made up for it." So I've lost one day of my life. I don't know what happened to it.
When you were that tired, which you must have been to
yes.
sleep that long, it's not natural, is
no,
it?
No.
How did it show itself in the way you behaved and felt?
Well, you were a bit queer, because anyway, I remember I said to the sergeant, "Well, there's one thing about it, if there's so few of us left, we can't go back again and take over the line, we'll get a bit of rest." He said, "Don't you bank on it." But anyway, he said, "You've got to go and get your pack first, your packs are all laid out in the line, he said, "Get your pack, and then he said, we'll check up, we can see how many packs there are left, and then he said, "We're going to interview somebody and see if you can tell us if you remember who were killed or who you think were wounded." You see, he said, "You know perhaps some of the officers." I said, "Yes, I was with one or two of the officers when they were either wounded or killed." You see, so they interviewed us all, and we had to tell them. I think there were 70 odd of us came back out of that door. Following night, we went back in the line. We're 3 days out, went back again. We couldn't believe it. We hadn't had time to get cleaned up.
But you were going to say how the fatigue affected you. I mean, you said it made you queer. How?
Well, your mind was in a whirl, I think. That was the mainly. You couldn't sort of concentrate on anything for a day or two.
Could you stay awake? When you were,
Oh, once I got awake, I could work, yes.
So you went back in the line again, much reduced?
Much reduced, yes.
At Gavrel again?
At Gavrel again, yes. We stayed quite a lot of time in Gavrel, in and out of there, you know.
And so how long would you be there for? When did you leave Gavrel, if you see what I mean?
Oh, I should think we were there for the in and out. Well, we did a bit of Gavrel, and we went to Arlo a bit further along the line. We did a few turns in there, a few weeks, and
I know you've got a couple more stories from your time at Gavrel. One thing, there was something about a new ration dump at Gavrel. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. They were having a lot of casualties. Because at the ration dump, the German had spotted where when the rations came up, you had your ration party went and they milled about and they could see where there'd been troop movements, and there's shelters and machine gunners from time to time. And the adjutant said to me, "Gunner, I want you to find us a new ration dump where it's a bit safer." So I said, "All right, sir." So I got a lad called Foster, I remember, and another gunner, and I said, "Look, I'm going up at the left-hand side of the road, and I want you to go up the right-hand side. We'll meet at the top at Pont Major, And see if you can find a place where the limbers can get down, because there was no motors on, so it was awesome down there. And there was so much rubbish on the ridge with old trenches and, that, and shell holes and that sort of thing. I said, see if you can find a place where the transport can get down and where our chaps can meet them. Not too far from the line. Okay, the Russians said, all right. And I said, I'll meet you at the top. We'll compare notes. I'll see if I can find anywhere suitable. When we got to the top, he said, well, I can't find anywhere where we can get the transport down here. He said, it's so terrible. I said, well, it's the same at my side. I said, I don't know how we're going to get the transport down. I said, we'll walk down the road. I'd be at the left-hand side and you'll be at the right and see if we can find any way through. There was a cutting, you see, and there was an embankment at the side when he got towards the village. We got within 100 yards of the village and I saw a cutting through the bank where the farmers had used to get their implements into the field. And I went over there, I thought, oh, we'd get a limber in here, lovely. We'd get a limber in here, that's champion. And it was only perhaps 150 yards away from the trenches, so they'd have to be able to carry the stuff all right. I thought, it's ideal, is this? We'll use this place. Now I said, look, tonight I'll go to the top of the ridge and make the transport section in to bring them down, and you go to where we're going to have the ration dump and bring the ration party there to collect it, you see, and we're going for a time. Now, the limbers couldn't come over the ridge in daylight. So I went to the top just before dusk, you see, and I waited for the transport coming up, and the first limber came up, and the sergeant in charge, and he said, now then, are you the one that's showing the transport? New ration dump? I said, yes, son. He said, all right then, where is it? Lead on. I said, it's down this road. It's about 100 yards from the village. He says, we're not going on that road. And a few more words besides that. Like, I said, well, that's where the ration path. He said, well, I'm not going that road. He said, you know what that road's like. I said, well, I know, but I can't do it. That's where the ration. He said, well, I'm not going down. Well, I couldn't do anything. I was a private. I couldn't order him, you see. Well, I was stuck. I said, well, the ration party will be waiting there for us. He said, well, I don't care. I'm not taking my transport down that road. And the officer, the transport officer, on horseback behind him, he came up. He said, now then, what's the matter, sergeant? He wants to take us down this road. And I've told him we aren't going. The officer says, why not? He said, well, you know what this road's like, sir. He says, yes, I know. He says, that where is this ration dump runner? So I told him. He says, all right. Sergeant, lead on. He says, these lads are here 24 hours a day. We're here for an hour on a night. They've got to be fed. They've got to be water. Lead on. So the sergeant said to me, you show us where we turn. I said, well, there's a cutting through on the left-hand side and he gets onto the field. And I quaked a bit as I went down that road because I knew they shelled it from time to time, but this was one of those nights when they didn't. The transport got there, got the lads were waiting, they got the rations off and the transport away. We used that ration dump for weeks and we had less casualties there than any other ration dump we ever had. And I always thought the Germans didn't shell us because they thought nobody would be so stupid as to go down a road like that, but they didn't know how stupid I was. But it came off.